What's up, everybody? I'm David Hain. Welcome to episode 189 of the A to D From Addict to Disciple podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please like, subscribe, follow, and share the link with your friends. And can you do me a favor? Share this episode with two friends, get them to listen to it, and then chat with them about it. If you'd like to get our curriculum, you can get the paperback or ebook of From Ashes to Destiny on Amazon. When we come back, we'll get into this episode entitled Manage Your Triggers. Welcome back to episode 189 of the A to D From Addict to Disciple podcast entitled Manage Your Triggers. I want to give a big welcome to my friends in recovery from the U.S., South Africa, and Australia for their participation in this group episode. As before, I'll be keeping them anonymous, but I'll be saying their answers as if we're having a live group meeting. So guys, here's the topic for today's group podcast episode. In recovery, we're taught to be aware of and avoid people, places, and things that could trigger our relapse. So it's possible that we begin to isolate ourselves from these situations. But by staying isolated, we may just simply think we're reinforcing our sobriety, when in reality, long-term recovery means learning to manage your triggers and not completely avoid them. Can you tell us about one trigger you have learned to manage because it was impossible to avoid? And how do you manage it? Ben, you ready to get us started? Sure, David. I've learned that my whiskey bone is connected to my pill bone, and my pill bone is connected to my weed bone, and my weed bone is connected to my cocaine bone, and my cocaine bone is connected to my heroin bone, and so on. For a while, going anywhere like a party scene at a club or casino was a no-go for me. However, my occupation as a singer sometimes plants me at a casino or at a wedding where there are several things in abundance available to me. For me, I manage it because the picture in my mind is my family, my home, and the things God has allowed me to accumulate over time. I know if I indulge in certain things, no doubt I will lose them. I try to keep a picture of those things either on my phone or in my wallet, so that if I have a few minutes during a break from singing, I try to just sit, look at the picture, and think of how blessed I am now that I have been on this recovery journey. And for me, at least it keeps me away from the poisons that would steal those things from me. I've done several hundred gigs in casinos now over the last 10 years, and thankfully, it's no problem anymore. It's almost as if it gets easier the more you meditate on the alternative blessings God has given you. For me, at least, knowing that I'm going home to jump in bed with my beautiful wife in my home that God has given me, driving home in the car He's given me, is a much greater alternative to whatever the other things have to offer. Great start, Ben. Thanks. I think we can all benefit by keeping an actual picture of the blessings we have as a reminder of what we could lose as the result of one bad decision. And I do love that, you know, old spin on the knee bones connected to the I like yours better. Charlie, what do you think? David, to be honest, and guys, my head is noisy right now, and it's hard to figure out anything I know about recovery or faith right now. I feel like I've regressed to the point that I'm not far from when I entered recovery. So much knowledge, hurts, hang-ups, and confusion that it's easier to say what isn't a trigger. Thankfully, early on in recovery, my first sponsee taught me that I am the trigger. When he told me this, I was upset with him and thought he was stupid because he was the only one telling me this, while most others were saying people, places, and things and such were triggers to look out for and to work out of my daily life. In a short time And in doing the fourth step with this man, I began to understand and to know that, yes, I am the trigger. I started sharing every day with multiple people my disturbances and my wanting to end the noise in my head and the heavy weight on my chest. Every day, all day, for like nearly 2 years straight, saying, now I'm upset. And each time, the 10th step, my sponsee showed me why I was upset, my choices which led to it, and how I can hand it over to God and can make it right and start over at any time with a clean slate. In my 4th step, I literally wrote on there about being harmed by everyone I met, so much so that he said I was making a mockery of the process. But I was serious. Everyone let me down, treated me like I didn't matter, left me, and hurt me. And in those times of working a 12-step program, it clicked. I am the trigger. And therefore, I need to work on healing, changing, and choosing a life of my wildest dreams, and I'll be free and sober. It works. I've had times of complete joy and not even thinking of suicide or a drink. I have faith in my program and God, and I'm focused on the basics of recovery, asking God for help, and renewing my mind in His Word. Good word, Charlie. It's so true that the noise we create inside our own head can be our biggest trigger, and we need to stay focused on the basics of recovery as we quiet the noise. Eddie, what do you think of this question? Well, David, growing up with family and friends who were and are still drinkers and more so alcoholics, I had to learn very quickly how to navigate my way around them and figure out how to control the triggers that came from that. But I look at the family that I'm living with. I remember everything and the worst things that I put them through. That's enough for me to never want to go back to giving it space in my life again. My addiction crushed them and nearly snuffed out my life. I constantly make sure that my faith is strong because I realize that without Christ in my life, there's no way I could ever be who and where I am. Christ is my rock and my foundation, and that's all I need. Awesome, Eddie. It's vital to have a solid rock as our firm foundation in recovery. Dante, what do you think about this question? David, if I may, I'd like to start by reading from the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verses 4 to 6. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. What that tells me, David, is that I realize pornography addiction is very slippery. It often takes a form like an idol during the day. Your mind goes places that no one knows about, captivating you into a false reality. And when you would least expect it, to catch you by surprise, when your eyes would be set upon things they shouldn't, and then your mind would go to places that it shouldn't. And then you wind up in a place where you don't want to be, but there you are. For me, my ability to bounce my eyes and heart away from the things that drew me into the deep recesses of lust is something I had to learn to do in order to manage the temptation and addiction around pornography. I often will recite scripture and have to do so in times of great temptation. Walking away from it completely could sometimes be very difficult, so I have to replace it with something else. A call to a friend. A task I was waiting to complete, but will take hold of right then and there, or simply sitting and focusing on the Lord and His goodness until the temptation subsides. Thanks, Dante. I really like your description of pornography as a very slippery idol, which takes on the form that can tempt you every day, but we need to bounce our eyes and our heart off of the temptation and into that place that brings us back into what we need to focus on. Harry, how about you? David, for me, there's been a few triggers in the beginning. People, places, and things. The people and places that were my triggers were the easiest. I cut off contact with every person that was poisonous towards my recovery. The places, I totally avoided. Even chose new driving routes so I could not be anywhere close to my trigger places. But the one trigger I learned to manage, which was impossible to avoid, was my money. Money was my biggest and worst trigger. The issue was that I had a lot of it and could afford the best of the best for myself and my family and, sadly to say, my drug addiction. Over the years, I could stay clean if I was broke with no money, but the minute I got paid or took a loan, I always relapsed. When I finally committed my life and addictions to the Lord, I developed a discipline with my finances in order to get my life back and restore everything I lost. I started monitoring every cent and started rethinking before every purchase. The cravings for drugs were utterly painful, and I prayed every time the thought of using came to my mind. I used the prayer to take that thought away. I developed a hatred for drugs and alcohol and kept a mental image in my head of the homeless person I was and how I will return back to that person if I ever relapse again. Good stuff, Harry. The process that you went through to monitor every purchase and every decision involving money is a great example of learning to manage our triggers. Freddie, you ready to close this out today? Sure, David. For me, it was family get-togethers. They were major triggers when I first got sober 8.5 years ago. Both sides of my family still drank, some heavily. So I started driving separately if I needed and have a purpose for attending. I make it a point to get there early and chat with family before things get crazy. Early in recovery, I missed many parties and was resentful others could drink. It was a very awkward period. I came to accept my disease and am now nurturing more healthy relationships with my family. And I often remember the lyrics of the Beatles song, Let It Be. Just the simple ones. And let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. Those words remind me to take life day by day and be grateful for the little things. And not to get caught up in what you can't control. Accept it and make the best of it. I can't totally avoid alcohol or how others drink. What I can do is amplify the positive, and when all else fails, have a plan B. Great way to close this out today, Freddie. We all need a reminder to keep us focused. A song lyric, a picture, a scripture verse, whatever it is. I like how you also focus on the positive things in even trying family relationships. But when we find ourselves at those parties, always have a plan B to provide an easy explanation for leaving the situation. Thanks for listening to this episode of the A to D From Addict to Disciple podcast. If you were saying, that's me, I think I need to learn to manage some of my triggers that I can't avoid, then it's time now to reach out and join a group. Message me in the link in this podcast or by email at davidfromatod@gmail.com or go to my website, www.fromatod.org, and click on the contact page. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave your comments by clicking on the link they provide in that platform. Tune in Monday for our next episode, and as always, stay safe and stay resilient.